Now proceed towards his realm with abundance of good deeds to your credit. Try to reach the abode where your neighbors will be his glory, his prophets, his angels, and his saints. They would never suffer the tortures of hell. He has said, He bestows his blessings to whom he pleases. And Allah is the Lord of abundance, bounties, and glory. Surah Al-Hadid 57:21. I have done my duty. I have told you what you ought to be told. It is now up to you to act according to my advice or to pay no heed to my words. Allah is enough to come to our help. He is quite sufficient for us, and He is the best to direct our destinies. Sermon 189. Burj bin Mushhar At-Tai was a Kharijite and a poet. He raised the slogan against Imam Ali: Command is the right of Allah only. He was in the habit of loudly repeating this slogan, especially when Imam Ali was in the vicinity. Once, when he was repeating this slogan, Imam Ali heard him and said, Be quiet, O you, with filthy mouth and broken teeth. May Allah not forgive you. When truth and justice were in the power, you were in a disgraceful state. And when inequity and sin started their reign, you began assuming power and suddenly appeared like the horns of a goat. Sermon 190. Imam Ali in this sermon has praised Allah, saying that He is eternal and peerless. The very creation of universe, the change in the conditions of matter, and dissipation of energy prove that He is the Creator, and nothing in the universe is eternal but His being. Imam Ali draws attention of man towards marvels of creation, citing two examples from insect life, that of one an ant and a locust. Then he wonders at those who, having seen the wonders of the universe, refuse to accept the grand Creator. Praise be to the Lord, whom eyes cannot envisage, senses cannot comprehend, and space cannot confine, and whose glory and might nothing in nature can screen or hide. The coming into existence of the universe and its very age is the clear proof and evidence of His pre-existence and eternity. The decay and destruction in nature proves that He will exist forever. The cycle of energy and matter, and of the chaos and cosmos, the pulsation of galaxies into primordial gas, and of this gas back into galaxies logically and mathematically, prove that everything must sometime come to an end, as it has started sometime. And as He has no beginning, so He has no end. Similarly, in properties, attributes, and characteristics of things created is an evidence that there can be no similarity between Him and His creatures, and that He has no equal and no peer. He is true and faithful to His promises, and He is above oppression and tyranny. There is no error of commission or omission in His system, neither excess or superfluity, nor deficiency or death,
destined and ordained the nature
in such a way that it provides for things existing whatever they require for their existence. The very existence of things is an evidence that He is Creator and that He existed before them. The inability of all forms of creation to exist by themselves and to provide for themselves without any outside help is a proof of His omnipotence and omnicompetence. The constant change in the conditions of the matter and persistent dissipation of energy reveals His attribute of eternity. All these facts prove that He is one, but His oneness is not mathematical entity. That He is eternal, having no beginning and no end. That His being and existence is not in need of any support or help from His creatures. That intellect accepts His existence, but not with the help of sight and senses. That His creatures bear witness to His being without coming in contact with Him, and that imagination and comprehension cannot confine Him, but can realize His existence. He is great, but not because of dimension. That is, His greatness is not a bodily greatness. He is great because of His might, glory, and His sway. I testify that Muhammad is His creature, His chosen messenger, His selected prophet and trusted servant, peace of Allah be upon him and his descendants. He sent His chosen messenger amongst us to show us the right path, and He was furnished with irrefutable proofs, undeniable successes, and clear commandments. The Holy Prophet conveyed His message to us, guiding us to differentiate between right and wrong, between truth and falsehood, between vice and virtue, and between piety and sinfulness. He showed us the true path to salvation, illuminated the path of religion, erecting minarets of light all along the way, and strengthening the bonds of Islam and ties of faith. If people could only study carefully the beauty and grandness of the art of creation and blessings hidden in various forms of life, they will be struck with the grandeur, will sincerely accept His greatness, will follow the path laid out by Him, will try to achieve His blessings, and will be afraid of His wrath. But it is a great misfortune of man that he has a diseased mentality and morbid vision. Why is he like that? Can he not see those small creatures which abound around him? Can he not realize how Allah has made these beings so small and yet so sturdy and strong? How small, delicate, and helpless they look, but how strongly their limbs are constructed, and steadily they are connected with each other. They are provided with eyes, ears, bones and skin as any big animal. Look at an ant. How tiny is its body and how delicate are its features. It is such a small creature that it often escapes a cursory glance, and few people care to attach any importance to it among the living things found on this earth. Look at it and study its ways of life, how it crawls, how it attacks its food, how it lifts a gram so many times heavier than its body, carries it to its hole, how it stores grains, and how in summer it gathers and stocks food for winter and rainy days. Allah has ordained that nature provides for it, the food that it requires. The merciful Allah has not forsaken even such a small creature, and caters for it, and looks after it, even if it has a habitat in dry and stony places. If you carefully study its alimentary canal, the places where food enters and refuse leaves its body, the cartilages of its ribs which protect its respiratory and circulatory systems, and its stomach, its head with pinpoint eyes, and its organs of hearing and their connection with brain and body, you will be struck at the marvels of creation in this small insect, and you will not find it easy to describe and explain them. Great and glorious is the Lord who has created it, made it stand on its legs, and made the microscopic organs of its body function in perfectly normal ways, in harmony with one another. No one was his partner in this work, and no one helped him to bring about the creation. If you seriously and diligently inspect and examine nature, you will realize that the one who has created an art has also created a date palm. He is the sole creator of the animal as well as of the plant. The details of living organisms are wonderful and delicate and amazingly intricate, and the differences in the organs of various forms of life are minute but precise. Creation of microscopic forms of life as well as huge and leviathan beings, the weak and the strong, and the delicate and the sturdy, makes no difference to him. To his power and might, one form of creation is as easy as the other. Similar is the case of creation of water, the air, the atmosphere, and the sky. Look at the sun, the moon, the green vegetation, mighty trees, the stones and the rocks, the nights and the days following each other, the flowing rivers, ranges of mountains and their lofty peaks, and differences of nationalities and languages in man. They all are sources of benefits and blessings to humanity. It is a pity that man refuses to accept the existence of this grand architect of the universe and this mighty creator of nature. It is a pity that he either believes his own existence to be an accident, or that he has come into being of his own accord and no one has created him. He thinks that he is like a plant whom nobody has grown and none had shaped, a life without a plan and purpose. But he offers no rational and objective proof of this. Can there be a building without a builder? Can there be an effect without a cause? There is another example near you to study minutely. Look at a locust. Can you not marvel about the symmetry of its body, its two red eyes twinkling like two stars, its two delicate and hidden organs of hearing, the senses to suit its way of life, its mouth so appropriate to its ways of nourishment, its sharp jaws are so useful to eat grass and leaves, and its artistically delicate but fairly strong legs, powerful enough to support its body on the blades of grass and leaves of trees. Farmers are afraid of it, but they cannot prevent it from bringing devastation and destruction to their fields. How big and strong they are, and how small a locust is when compared to them. But these farmers, even when gathered in numbers, cannot drive the locust away from their fields. It settles down on their fields and gardens and eats its fill. It is no bigger than the smaller finger of a farm, but is a big problem for him. Glorious and exalted is the Lord, before whom everything in nature is to bow down willingly or unwillingly. It's to remain humble and meek, and is to yield its very existence to him and to his command. Flying birds, which appear to us so free to move about, are in his complete control. He knows how many feathers each one of them has, and how many breaths each will take in its lifetime. Some of them he has destined for land, and some he has ordained as water birds. He has fixed for them their ways of life, and knows their varieties, species, and genre. There is the crow, the hawk, the pigeon, and the ostrich. Each species is created with its peculiarities and with its habitats and ways of feeding. Just look to the thick clouds, so heavily laden with rain. Each land is allotted its share of them. They turn dry lands into green fields and dead land into lively verdures and pleasing gardens. Sermon 191. In this sermon, Imam Ali has at some length discussed the attributes of Allah, warning us not to ascribe our qualities and attributes to Allah, and thus not to create our glorified image as a personified deity. While describing divine attributes, he has hinted at the limitations of human mind, science, and nature, at the theory of inertia, at the total annihilation of the universe, and at its recreation. Whoever describes qualities and qualifications to Allah cannot actually believe in his oneness. He is so sublime and so transcendent that man cannot form any idea of his real attributes and cannot suggest his own good qualities in him. Imam Ali says that this is a wrong attitude, and this way man creates his own exalted image and calls it his God, and thus a pantheon comes into being instead of one Allah. Whoever tries to find among the created things an example or an analogy for his attributes will never understand the reality of his existence. Whoever attempts to compare him with any of his creatures will fail to visualize his greatness, his omnipotence, and his omnipresence. A being which can be understood on account of its peculiarities, attributes, and limitations is a created being, and one which cannot exist by itself, but requires from others some kind of support or help for its existence, cannot be a God, and it could not have come into existence of its own accord. To perform an action or a deed, Allah does not require the help of any bodily organ like hands, feet, mind, eyes, ears, etc., or any kind of instruments. He has predestined and preordained every phase and every aspect of nature, but was not obliged to the assistance of mental faculties. He is wealthy and rich, but not with the help of things created by him. He is beyond the reach of time and space, and too mighty to require any help from others. Creation of mind and mental capacities for his creatures proves that they cannot exist without his kindness and grace, and he is above the need of their help or advice. Creation of opposing faculties and properties in nature proves that no one can be brought against him. Dependence of one aspect of nature upon another is an evidence to the fact that he is not dependent upon and in need of help or support from his creatures. He is the Lord who created a contrast between light and darkness, land and sea, solids and liquids, and between heat and cold, who gathered and collected together opposite and contradictory forces, and made antithetical faculties supplement to one another, who compelled antipodal capacities to act complementary to each other, and forced separated or divergent properties and objects to act as supplement to one another. It proves his complete control over everything in nature, of making and unmaking, creating and destroying, uniting and severing, and gathering and dispersing things, energies, properties and capacities, as and when he so wishes. He is the creator of all, and he is free to mold nature as he likes. Space cannot confine him, and his might cannot be brought within the scope of mathematical calculations. Properties, physical or chemical, capacities and qualities are attributes of things having bodies. The time of its creation, whatever it may be and however long in the past it might have extended, shows that neither the universe nor anything in it is eternal. The very dependence of one thing in nature upon other for its existence shows that none can exist free of his support or help, and destiny or decree. In spite of this dependence, minds only can conceive his greatness and glory, but eyes can and will never see him. Neither movement and motion, nor rest and repose have access to his supreme being. He created movement and imparted it to things and introduced it into nature as a sign of everything being dependent for its existence on some force outside itself. Along with one motion, he impelled rest and stillness wherever necessary. How could the attributes and limitations which he imparted to things created by him could act upon him? How could qualities which he originated in others could be traced in him? If such a thing was possible, then his being would be subjected to change in place and condition. If a change of condition or place in his being is accepted, then analysis of his being is also to be accepted. And this will eventually lead us to go astray from our faith in him, in his eternity, in his omnipotence and omnipresence. If you accept any being before him, you will be logically bound to admit that something will remain into existence even after him. If you presume that he needs something, then you will be obliged to presume that the something could only be provided from an outside agency. Thus, attributes and limitations of created beings will have to be accepted in the Supreme Creator, and he will have to be lowered in our minds to the level of his creatures. Therefore, it is not a sane and rational action to suggest in his being qualifications and qualities of his creatures, because however high or sublime they may be, they suffer from limitations, which is the logical result of their being part of nature, and he cannot be affected with any kind of limitations. It must therefore be remembered that He is above all the attributes of His creatures, that things which affect, influence, and actuate the mortal universe, and all that it contains, will not and cannot affect Him, that no change can take place in Him, and no lessening, diminishing, dwindling, decay, and dissipation of His might and glory is possible, that He is not begotten from anyone, nor He begets anybody, that He is far transcendent to possess any kith and kin, or to have any sex characteristics. He is inaccessible to the highest intellect, which can never form a correct idea of His might and glory. He is incomparable to anything. Intellect cannot find a similarity or analogy to visualize His being. Senses cannot reach Him, and He cannot be felt or touched by hand. He neither changes nor passes from one condition to another. Aeon cannot age Him. Light and darkness cannot bring about any variation in His power. He has no body and no form. Nothing in the universe can raise His power or prestige, and nothing can lower it. No one can guide or direct Him, or can influence His policy and program. Nothing can enclose or overlap Him, and He does not cover anything. He is the creator of all and is not influenced by His creatures. His omnipresence is in complete control of everything in the universe. He talks, though He has no tongue and no mouth. He hears, though He has no ears. He sees, though He has no eyes. He remembers everything without the aid of mind and memory. His commands are not carried through words of any language. He thinks and wishes without the medium of mind or heart. His mercy or benevolence is not due to softening of heart, and His wrath is not on account of prejudice, malice, or enmity. When He wishes to create a thing, matter, energy, condition, or state, He just commands it to be, and it comes into existence. But this command is not conveyed in words which a tongue could formulate, or which sound carries to ears. The saying of Allah is His will, obeyed into action by any or every of His creatures which exist or which come into existence owing to His command. His commands are immutable, but they are not eternal. The only eternal existence is His being and nothing else. If His words are considered as eternal, they would in themselves be another Allah. It is false to think that He came into existence, which means once He was not, and then He came into being. If you thus imagine Him to be, then understand once again that you introduce in Him all the limitations of an ephemeral and mortal creature, and the Creator is brought down by you to the level of creatures created by Him. Remember that He is absolute and infinite, a being without limitations, attributes, or qualities of His creatures. He created everything without the help of any model, pattern, sample, or specimen of things created by some other being. He was not helped in the act of creation by any one of His creatures. He created the earth without any exertion or without being busy with the work. He suspended it in the space without any suspensions and supports. He made it safe from breaking into pieces and from rusting into fragments. He created mountains upon it to act as pegs, to act against the drift of floating continents. He made streams flow and opened up valleys and basins for rivers.